Today's episode is sponsored in part by Modern Mammals, creators of a new hair washing product for men. You can help support Based on a True Story when you use the code BOATSPODCAST at modernmammals.com for 10% off. I've really been enjoying their shampoo light bar as an alternative to traditional shampoo. And I know it's in the name, but honestly, when I first used it, I was surprised at just how light and airy it feels. It reminds me of using a bar of soap for your hair, except it's even better than that because if you're like me, you don't like the residue that some actual bars of soap leave behind. And the shampoo light bar is easy to wash out without leaving any residue behind. Modern Mammals also focuses on creating products that help you keep your hair's natural oils so it's not left feeling poofy and frizzy. Go to modernmammals.com and use code BOATSPODCAST for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code BOATSPODCAST. Don't forget to use the promo code BOATSPODCAST so they know I sent you. Thanks, Modern Mammals. Okay, let's start today's episode. Hello, and welcome to Based on a True Story. This week, where we'll look at how movies depicted historical events that happened between January 9th and January 15th. We start on January 10th, 49 BCE, Italy. Sun streams through the trees, casting rays of light on the lush green grass below. The sounds of rushing water can be heard. A lone man can be seen, wearing the military uniform of the Roman Empire. Walking through the woods with heavy steps, he makes his way to the edge of the river. He slows to a stop, looking at the water with a concerned look on his face. The river is a small one and not deep enough to cover the numerous rocks that can be seen poking up out of the water. It's the kind of small river or stream you can easily cross on foot. But he doesn't cross it. Instead, he paces up and down the river with that same concerned look on his face as he stares at the water. As he nears the camera, we can see him clenching his jaw as the gears turn inside his mind. In the next shot, we see a line of Roman soldiers. Most of them are on foot, although there are some cavalry in there as well. In the foreground is the river. The soldiers aren't moving, they're just standing there in front of the river. The man from earlier is on a horse now. He looks back at the soldiers. Then, slowly, he coaxes his horse forward to cross the river. The soldiers fall in behind their leader, crossing the river as well. This was from the Netflix miniseries simply called Roman Empire, and what it's depicting really did happen. The man leading his army across the river is Julius Caesar, who's played by Ditch Davey in the series. The name of the river is the Rubicon. And while it's true that it wasn't a physically difficult river to cross as far as the terrain is concerned, it was a huge deal for Caesar to cross the river with his army. You see, the Rubicon River was the border between Rome and Gaul. As a quick little side note, Gaul was a region in Western Europe that covered lands in modern-day France, Switzerland, Belgium, Luxembourg, Germany, and some parts of Italy. For years prior to the event that happened this week in history, Caesar had been conquering Gaul for the Romans, something that earned him a lot of fame in Rome. It also earned him some enemies. They didn't like how popular Caesar was getting. One of them in particular was Pompey, who convinced the Roman Senate to order Caesar to return to Rome, where they wanted him to resign his post. There's some debate over exactly what the Senate wanted to do to Caesar because their plans never came to fruition. Caesar did return to Rome, but the reason crossing the Rubicon River with his army was such a big deal was because it meant Caesar was entering Roman lands at the head of his army. According to Roman law, only elected magistrates could lead their armies in Roman territory. Breaking this law would immediately brand both the leader and the soldiers as outlaws and condemn them to death. So normally, a Roman general would disband their army before entering Roman lands. When Caesar crossed the Rubicon at the head of his army, he was basically declaring war on Rome. It was a point of no return. This act is seen as the start of a civil war that ended up with Pompey fleeing Rome and Julius Caesar as dictator of Rome. Probably the biggest thing to mention about the accuracy of how the series depicts the crossing of the Rubicon is to simply point out that we just don't know a lot about what the actual event looked like. For example, I know I started this segment by saying it happened on January 10th, but we don't even know if that is accurate for sure. Most historians say it probably happened on the night of January 10th or the early morning hours of January 11th, but that's more of an educated guess than a known fact, though. If you want to watch the event this week, check out Season 2, Episode 3 of Netflix's docudrama series simply called Roman Empire. Crossing the river itself is about the 20-minute mark of that episode, although the entire episode is called Crossing the Rubicon, and it does a great job of setting up that event. As I'm recording this right now, on the other side of my door is my cat. He's always wherever I am as I'm working on the podcast. He watches all the movies with me, and he lets me know when it's time to stop working by sitting on my keyboard. I love the little guy. And as a pet owner, that means there are expenses like vet bills that can pop up, and sometimes it's unexpected. That's why I was happy to learn about today's sponsor, EarnIn, because they can help make sure that I've got the money to cover those unexpected vet bills. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day, or up to $750 per pay period. Now you can join over 3.5 million customers. Get the peace of mind that comes with EarnIn. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in True Story under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. True Story under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Thanks, EarnIn.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
January 13th, 1968. Folsom, California. We're at a prison. As the camera shows us different locations around the prison, we can see there are uniformed guards like you would expect, but no prisoners in sight. Even inside the prison, we can see empty cells, no prisoners. The muffled sound of music can be heard throughout the halls of the prison, though, and it's kind of odd. Then we can see it. All the prisoners are in a single room, cheering, clapping, and stomping their feet to the beat. The musicians on stage are playing the same riff over and over. As the musicians are playing, the guitarist looks rather nervously at a door behind the stage. Behind the door, Joaquin Phoenix's version of Johnny Cash seems deep in thought. After this, the movie jumps to Arkansas in 1944, but later in the movie, we see more of the same event. And we see Joaquin Phoenix's version of Johnny Cash chat with the prisoners a little bit before singing his song called Cocaine Blues. That event really did happen this week in history, but the real Johnny Cash did not start off the performance with Cocaine Blues. Johnny Cash actually played two live performances at Folsom State Prison on January 13th, 1968, and both performances started off with his song named after the prison, called Folsom Prison Blues. The first performance started at 9:40 a.m., while the second was at 12:40 p.m. Part of the reason for two performances was because, just like we see mentioned in the movie, they were recorded live. And Cash wasn't really sure how that would turn out, so the second performance was kind of a backup of sorts. Except that kind of backfired a little bit because after playing 19 songs in the first concert, the musicians were pretty tired, understandably. But they went right back to work playing another 16 songs, or 17 if you count the repeat of Greystone Chapel at the end of the 12:40 p.m. performance. Something else the movie doesn't really focus on is that Johnny Cash was not the only one to perform at the prison that day. Carl Perkins and the Statler brothers were also there, each performing a song or two before Johnny Cash took stage. If you want to watch a depiction of the event this week, check out 2005's Walk the Line. It opens with the prison performance, but then we actually see more of it in the movie later on at about the 2-hour mark.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
January 15th, 2009, New York City. There's a word that you don't want to hear coming from the cockpit of an airplane. Mayday, mayday. Tom Hanks' version of Captain Chesley Sullenberger exclaims this, and he goes on to explain over the radio to air traffic control that they've lost both engines. Aaron Eckhart's version of First Officer Jeff Skiles is pushing controls, but he says there's no relight on engine 1 or 2. From outside, we can see the plane they're flying is a huge passenger jet. Sully tells the controller he thinks they can get back to LaGuardia, talking about one of the airports in New York City. Again, seeing the plane from the outside, we can see the engines seem to be spitting out fire in an inconsistent manner. The plane is slowly losing altitude. As the plane turns, the camera angle gives us a better look at the ground and the massive city sprawling out beneath the plane. Who knows how many people will be killed should the huge plane crash into the heavily populated city. Sully and Skiles are piloting what essentially amounts to being a glider at this point, and the buildings of New York City are dangerously close. Smoke streams from the engines as the airplane passes by buildings that are tall enough to be hit. Inside, passengers are screaming. They're understandably terrified of what they're going through. It's getting rough. They're bouncing around as the plane's altitude creeps lower and lower. Sully mutters, "Lori, I love you," under his breath, talking about his wife, who's played by Laura Linney in the movie. Finally, the plane crashes into the side of a building in a huge ball of flame. Just then, Sully wakes up in a cold sweat. It was all a dream. This is how the 2016 movie, simply called Sully, opens, with a dream version of a very real event that took place this week in history. And the real event did not end the way we see in the opening of the movie, but the movie also admits to this being a dream. And since it pulled that little bait and switch, I thought I would do the same thing here. In the true story, Chelsea Sullenberger and Jeff Skiles were piloting an Airbus A320 aircraft. It was U.S. Airways Flight 549 going from New York's LaGuardia Airport, bound for Charlotte, North Carolina, and then on to Seattle, Washington. At 3:24:56 p.m., the flight was cleared for takeoff. Less than a minute later, it was airborne. Everything seemed normal. It was a clear day with some scattered clouds in the sky. Then at 3:27:11 p.m., while the plane was still climbing from its initial takeoff, it hit a flock of Canada geese. At this point, they had traveled 4.5 miles and less than 3,000 feet above the ground. Passengers reported hearing loud bangs, fire flying out of the engines, and then silence. The air smelled of fuel. Because the plane was climbing at the moment of impact, it kept going up for a little while, but it only went just above 3,000 feet before it started to go back down. Sully took the controls while Skiles tried to restart the engines, but to no avail. At 3:27 p.m., 33 seconds, Sully radioed in the mayday and said he was going to try to go back to LaGuardia. He was told he had permission to return to runway 31. Meanwhile, LaGuardia halted all other flights to clear the air for flight 1549. Moments later, Sully realized he wasn't going to make it back to LaGuardia and asked for other options. There was an airport in New Jersey nearby, and air traffic control gave them permission to land there. That was the plan for a fleeting moment, until Sully realized they couldn't do that either. He told air traffic control they're going to land in the Hudson River. Passing less than 1,000 feet above the George Washington Bridge that spans the Hudson, Sully told everyone on board to brace for impact. 90 seconds later, at 3:31 p.m. on January 15, 2019, Flight 1549 splashed down in a hard landing. Everyone on board survived. And since the FAA has released the cockpit recording to the public domain, here is the actual recording from that day where you'll hear conversations between air traffic control and Flight 1549 with the call sign Cactus 1549.
Cactus 1549, turn left lane 270.
This is Cactus 1539. Hit birds, so you've lost thrust on both engines, returning back towards LaGuardia.
Okay, you need to return to LaGuardia. Turn left, heading up 220.
220.
Tower, stop your departure. He's got emergency returning. It's 1529. Bird strike. He lost all engine. He lost the thrust in the engines. He's returning immediately.
Cactus 1529. Which engines?
He lost thrust in both engines, he said.
Got it.
Cactus 1529. We can get it for you. Do you want to try to land 1913?
1913. We may end up in the Hudson.
Joey 2760. Turn left 070.
From 070. Joey 2760.
Hi, Cactus 1549. It's going to be left traffic to runway 31.
Unable.
Okay, what do you need to land? Cactus 1549, runway 4 is available if you want to make left traffic to runway 4.
I'm not sure we can make any runway. What's over to our right? Anything in New Jersey? Maybe Teterboro?
Okay, yeah, off your right side is Teterboro Airport. Do you want to try to go to Teterboro?
Yes.
Teterboro, Empire, actually, LaGuardia departure guy, emergency inbound.
Hey, guys.
Cactus 1529 over the George Washington Bridge wants to go to the airport right now.
Wants to go to our airport, check. Does he need assistance?
Yes. It was a bird strike. Can I get him in for runway 1?
Runway 1, that's good.
Cactus 1529, turn right 280. Can land runway 1 at Teterboro?
We can't do it.
Okay, which runway would you like at Teterboro?
We're going to be in the Hudson.
I'm sorry, say again, Cactus. Alright. Kelly 2760, contact New York 126.8.
2760, Joey 2760.
Cactus 1549, radar contact is lost. You also got Newark Airport off your 2 o'clock in about 7 miles. Eagle 5, 4718, turn left thing 210.
210, 4718. I think he said he was going in the Hudson.
Cactus 1529, you still on? Cactus 1529, if you can, you got runway 29 available at Newark, it'll be 2 o'clock in 7 miles. Eagle 5, 4718, climb 18, 12000.
Okay, 1,000 and even 5 at.
If you want to see the depiction this week, check out the 2016 movie Sully. But the actual depiction is not the dream at the beginning of the movie, but rather it's closer to the end at about an hour and 18 minutes into the film. This episode of Based on a True Story this week was written and produced by me, Dan Lefebvre. Before I let you go, there are some birthdays this week for people who have been mentioned in movies or TV shows. On January 9th, 1913, President Richard Nixon was born. You can learn more about his scandal in office by watching the 2008 movie Frost Nixon, where Nixon is played by Frank Langella. We covered that movie way back in episode number 4 of Based on a True Story. Oh, and another one worth mentioning is the 1976 film, All the President's Men. That talks about the uncovering of the scandal with Nixon. Nixon isn't really in that movie himself. It's all about the uncovering of the scandal with the reporters. But it's still a good movie to watch this week. And if you do, learn about the true story in episode number 122. On January 10th, 1843, Frank James was born. He's the older brother of Jesse James, and he was played by Sam Shepard in the 2007 movie The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. If you decide to watch that movie this week, check out episode number 166 of Based on a True Story to learn more about that movie. On January 14th, 1741, Benedict Arnold was born. He was the American general turned traitor during the American Revolutionary War, and you can see him portrayed by Owain Yeoman in AMC's Turn, Washington Spies. Now, that's a TV series with four seasons, so you might not get through all of it this week, but it's still a great watch. And after you're done, check out episode number 139 of Based on a True Story, where we dig into the real history behind the show. The last birthday to mention this week was on January 15th, 1929, for none other than Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. As a fun little fact, Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a federal holiday here in the United States to mark his birthday, but it's not always on his birthday. It's the third Monday in the month, even though the real Martin Luther King Jr. was born on a Tuesday. For example, this year, MLK Day is on January 16th and not January 15th. Oh, and MLK is played by David Oyelowo in the great movie from 2014 simply called Selma. And as you probably guessed by now, we have covered that on the podcast too. If you watch that movie this week, check out episode number 167 afterward to learn more about the true story. Wow, what a way to kick off the Boats This Week series. Every birthday was for someone in a movie or TV show that we have already covered. I don't expect that will always be the case, but it worked out this time. If you're finding some value in Based on a True Story, you can support the podcast over at basedonatruestorypodcast.com/support. There you can also learn how to get ad-free versions and help to keep the show going. Until next time, thanks so much for listening, and I'll chat with you again really soon.